Varicosity Vein Center, providing vein treatment relief for vein disease, spider veins, and varicose veins for over 20 years. Their team of doctors and vein specialists deliver techniques and care for residents in Jackson, Madison, Ridgeland, and Central Mississippi. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB Public Media app.
Okie dokie, folks, welcome back. Horticulture's Phil DeRushing, and we're talking about gardening. So if you've got any kind of thing that related to your yard or potted plants or bugs or blights or shrubs or trees or lawns or any of that kind of stuff is related to growing stuff, we're going to call it gardening. Gardening comes from an old word. It means a guarded area, guarded area. It also became horticulture came from the same word, meant courtyard, an enclosed special place. So if you don't feel like you're in a special place in your yard or your garden, let's see what we can do about that. What's up, Java? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Felder. And also, didn't garden kind of lend itself to kindergarten?
Yeah. With kids, guarded area. You know, yeah. The Gordos is a word. Gordos became guarded and also became courtyard and horticulture. Horticulture and gardening, upscale, downscale. And then we take it further. You know, garden became yard.
Yeah.
You know, yard is homegrown horticulture. And that's what we're going to talk about. So how you doing, though?
Oh, I'm doing fine, man. It's a great Friday afternoon. I am finally accepting these mild temperatures. I think we're here. I'm waiting for the rare 100 degree September day, October day. It's coming.
Yeah.
But, well, you know.
My prediction is always state fair. In Mississippi, state fair usually starts out hot and ends up cold.
Yeah.
I mean, for some reason, we don't know if that's going to happen or not. But anyway, I got a lot of stuff to talk about today, but this is all about folks who want to chat about stuff. We go to Clarksdale first?
Yeah, we got some early callers. Let's do it.
Okay. Tan, good morning. How are you?
Hello? I'm doing great.
Good. What's up?
I had a question for you. You know, we had the weather you mentioned, the very hot weather over the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. And then in the wintertime, we had very cold weather.
Yep.
Both the cold and the hot killed plants at our house for the first time for a while.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you have any advice on protecting those.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it wasn't just a cold winter. It was really cold, but it was really early before plants had a chance to, you know, plants kind of slow down. They go dormant, and it's a slow process. And we had that really deep, deep hard freeze, middle of the winter freeze, early. So that's what caught a lot of plants. Then it warmed up in the wintertime, and plants thought it must be springtime because we've had our cold, and they sprouted out earlier than normal in a late freeze, and then it turned hot and dry. And I've actually lost magnolia trees and nandinas. Whatever killed the dinosaurs couldn't kill magnolias, but 2023 did. Anyway, to answer your question, there's not much we could have done to protect against that cold, because plants, you can't cover them up. And that was unusually early, unusual hard. Not much we can do about the heat except water plants. And a lot of people are watering every day. I think that's a mistake. People say, well, I got to. I'm thinking, no, you don't. Plants need a really good, slow, deep soaking. I'm talking about trees and shrubs. A really good, slow soaking every 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. Potted plants, couple of times a week. If you really water it good and deep, then that's better than watering frequently. So other than that, there's not much we can do. Down the road, we can think about, if you're going to replace things, replace them with something that we know can take extreme cold and extreme heat and drought. And things are changing. And luckily, I work a lot in Texas and Oklahoma with lectures. They got nice gardens in Texas and Oklahoma. We can have them too. We're just not going to have that Florida garden anymore. But, you know, other than a good deep soaking, there's not much we can do to help plant. You can prune.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Does covering, say, a pindar Tom help at all?
Not up in the Delta. You know, these plants, you know, they'll tolerate cold, but they won't take sudden hard deep freezes. You know, and if you're going to cover them, you need to really, it's the tip. You know, palms only have two growing points. They're roots at the bottom, little furry looking things, and the very tip where the last few leaves come out, the trunk is dead. You can't prune a palm back like you can a regular plant. So, you know, if you could get some plastic or something and wrap it around the top part, that'll help down to about 20 degrees for a while.
Okay.
But, you know, other than that, not much we can do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just trying to be real bottom line. As if I was looking at these plants in my yard, what would I do?
Okay.
No, all right, Dan. Appreciate it. Hey, Javi, it was tough, man. I lost plants that, you know, I've always prided me. You've heard me say, I don't do anything to them. I don't cover them up. I don't water my plant. Well, I lost some stuff, okay?
And also, too, I have learned over the years working with you and being on this show, it happens.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everybody, you know, we get calls all the time about what can I do and why did this happen. But sometimes the plant just can't. You know, take the environment.
Well, the one plant, and I've got 10 different varieties of this, 10 different varieties of this one plant in my garden. It doesn't care how cold it gets, how hot it gets, how dry, it doesn't matter. They always look good, and it's my glass bottle trees. Oh, and I will throw out one other thing before we go to the next call. A little gem magnolia, a little dwarf magnolia, like we have in front of our studio here mm-hmm. at MPB. They look terrible. Mine died. It's 15 years old. It died. It's completely brown. And brown's a color, too. I don't mind brown. Now, brown and green are important colors. But I just needed a break. So I went to one of the box stores, got me a big old extra large can of shiny black spray paint.
No.
And I fixed that thing up, man. It looks good. And I was going to spray paint it green, but now I got a lot of green. I think it orange, you know, and the neighbors.
Wait,
come on.
It's almost October. We're getting ready for Halloween.
I know. I could have turned a big old pumpkin. But I sprayed it every leaf on it shiny black. And it looks good. You know, it's dead anyway. It doesn't care.
So anyway,
I've got a shiny, glossy black little lump out in my garden right on the street. I think it looks great. Some people say, why you do that? I'm thinking, shut up, you know, because it was dead. I'm not going to get around to cutting it. Anyway, let's go up to Mabin. Talk with Ruth. Ruth, how you doing today?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm really enjoying this little bit of cooler weather.
Yeah, it feels good.
My question is about a muscadine that's probably at least 50 years old mm-hmm. when we bought the place. And 2 years ago, it had grown up into the trees and everything.
Oh,
I cut it back. I put it on. Well, I put the vines on the wire, made five wires about 20 feet long each, and just did it beautiful, grew. And, of course, didn't make much first year, and I wasn't expecting much. Last fall, I pruned them back just like you said, you know, mm-hmm. just left a certain number of little things 4 or 5 inches long.
Right.
And this year, in the spring, and I expect the weather caused it to not produce a lot of muscadines. It just made a handful. But it has sprouted back out. I mean, they are 5 and 6 foot long.
Yeah.
Things coming out. Should I have cut those off back in the spring? I let them go.
Oh, no. These things, you know, the new growth this year is sending energy back to the roots, and it's what keeps the plant alive. So what you do is in the wintertime, whatever grew this year, you know, 4 or 5 feet long, 3 feet long, 8 feet long, whatever grew this year, this coming winter, prune those back to stubs that are 4 or 5 inches long. You know, they need at least 2 or 3 leaf joints. So everything that grew this year, cut it back to stubs in the wintertime. And then just do that every year. That's the only, you know, you can prune them in the late summer. If you're going to harvest, you can cut them a little bit. But in general, those leaves are important. So in the wintertime.
That overgrown look is natural and normal then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, muscadines are, I mean, they're crazy vines. You know, they're really vigorous. This is one of the reasons if you don't prune them every year, within 2 or 3 years, they get out of control. So every winter, just make a note to cut whatever grew the year before back to some stubs, at least 2 or 3 leaf joints.
Well, I've been doing that, and I enjoy it. It's a very satisfying job, and I thank you so much for letting me know.
Let me ask you, you're in Mabin. How far are you from Noxapater? You know where Noxapater is?
Yes, I believe it's about 60 miles southwest of me.
Oh, I thought you were, okay, this in Winston, this is near Louisville.
Now Louisville is closer. I think you have to go through Louisville. I'm about 30 miles northwest, I guess, of Starkville in
this year. Oh, I've been through Mabin a whole bunch. When I look at maps, I see all these little towns I can't remember. Anyway, I'm giving a talk next week in Noxapater, and I just thought maybe it was a little bit closer than that.
So, I wish it was.
Anyway, good luck. And by the way, usually it's been my experience when you prune muscadines, it's always in cold weather, and they always whip you across the face. It's going to sting, so just be careful.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. For those of you who don't know, muscadine is a native grape. We have all different species of grape, the bunch grapes, the native grapes. So muscadine is a type of grape. And there's two out in the woods, they're either male or female. So if you want muscadines to eat, to me it's better to go ahead and go to a garden center and get what they call a self-fertile variety. There's some that pollinate themselves, so one vine will produce plenty of grapes. And if you have one of the female varieties that have got bigger, sweeter, juicier berries, then a self-pollinating one will do itself and the nearbys. So muscadines, and there's bronze ones and there's dark purple ones. Some people call all the bronze ones scupperdongs, which is an old-fashioned one. So bronze or dark-colored, self-fertile, terrific landscape plants, beautiful fall color, but you got to prune them.
Which ones make the muscadine wine? The purple ones?
Either of them. Okay. And the juice. And this is an oddball thing. Not quite an answer to a question nobody asked, but now that you ask, grape juice is clear. If you want a rosé or a red wine, you ferment it with the skins in there, because the color from the purple skin is what gives it the color to the juice.
Wow, you really
I should have saved that one.
You
right?
Should have. That was a segment right there. I did not know that.
Yeah, but anyway, they're cool vines, but you really need to stay on top of them. Okay, let's go to Clinton now. Danny, good morning, and thanks for calling. What's up?
Yes, sir. Good morning. My garden's about to stop, but my okra's growing good.
It's better too tall to pick, too, isn't it?
No, but I found a long time ago you just cut it off.
There you go. Bush it out.
And it'll come back from the bottom.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've tried pickling and different things. I love it fried, but the boiled, it's just got that slimy taste.
I'm with you. I can't eat boiled okra. You fry it, put a lot of ketchup on it, I'll eat it. But it's just right. Too slick for me.
Is there anything that I can do to do away with the slime?
No, that's part of it. That's the part of what they call the inscape of okra. Okra, if it ain't slimy, it ain't okra.
also, my bottleneck gourd is growing real good. I'm trying to figure out a recipe to make gourd soup.
Well, gourds are sort of like cucumbers and squash when they're small. You just do them like you would squash.
Well, I'll be doggone.
Yeah,
the luffa.
Yeah, yeah. Stuff you used sponges to scratch your back with.
Well, a fella gave me some seed one time. He said it was running okra.
You know, it's really interesting, because that is one of the folk names. I'd heard of runner okra all my life, and all it is a vine that makes a long, skinny, it's a gourd, and when they're small, you eat it like okra. So there you go. Instead of okra, grow you some loofah gourds and eat those. That won't be slimy.
It won't be slimy.
Yeah.
And anyway, when you let them go, they'll go to that back scratcher.
Yeah.
When they're young, it tastes just like okra, but it's not slimy. You're right there.
You know, you were leading me towards that. You were teaching me that. I couldn't answer your question, and you led me to it. Thank you. And by the way, okay. you got to watch that loofah gourd, because it will go to the top of your tree.
Well, that's where my gourds are growing.
Yeah.
They just run, like you told me, it's running for the river.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, I never really thought about it. What is an okra that's not slimy? Well, it's a loofah gourd.
Right. I'm going to have to do me some next year.
Well, just okay. give it plenty of room to run, Danny. Appreciate your call. Thank you, Guy.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Job, you know what a loofah is? Have you seen these things?
Is that where you?
It's like these bat scratches. They're sponges. They're
yeah, that you use in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah, that's the inside of a gourd, loofah gourd. If you leave them on the vine, you know, after they mature, that skin just sort of crinkles off, or you can wash it off, and you got the skeleton is what we call a loofah sponge.
Oh wow!
But when it's little, you can eat it. It's called running okra. I will be in Noxipater this coming Thursday night. Noxipater is between Louisville and Philadelphia. It's a cool little town. And Faith Estes, a dear friend who's a wonderful gardener up in Winston County, she's invited me to come down and give a presentation. And they got a lot of room. We got Jim McAdory, the county extension agent, the well-known, really popular guy, be there. I'll give some more details in a bit about some things that are coming up. But the Noxipater Baptist Church, we're going to have a terrific time.
That's your handiwork, Felder.
Frank Zappa.
Oh, yeah, Frank Zappa.
Call any vegetable. You know, as an interesting avant-garde musician, did some pretty bizarre stuff, really bizarre. But he has some great quotes. Let me share three Frank Zappa quotes. One was in my last book called Maverick Gardener, and that was, "Without deviation from the norm, progress is not possible." I've always loved that quote. Here's a couple of other. He said, "There's only two things to remember. Don't stop and keep going." And that applies to gardening. And then the very last thing, this is a great quote from Frank Zappa, and it's about gardening. And what makes my garden work is the plants can come and go, and they die, and the flowers, and blah, 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 blah. But it still looks like a garden. He said, "The most important thing in art is the frame. For painting, literally, for other arts, figuratively, because without this humble appliance, you can't know where the art stops and the real world begins."
Amen, amen.
So, you know, this is the first thing I always tell people. You want to do a garden, put your hard feature out there. Sort of like putting your foot on the floor when the world is spinning. It gives you a place to gather your thought and then plant stuff around that. And if they don't make it, you still got that first thing.
There you go.
Okay, and I want to thank Will Pickering, our intern, for being our phone greeter today. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And I'm not sure which one to go. The one with the little blinky light, which one do I go to first?
Well, let's go to Barbara in Boonville.
Barbara in Boonville. Good morning, Barbara. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Howdy.
I got a tip on that okra. My niece told me to cook it in the microwave and put garlic salt on it and butter and just barely cover it in water and turn it on about 7 minutes and check it and see if it's tender enough to eat and it won't be slimy.
Okay, so you just take it like right off the plant. Little garlic salt, put in a little bit of water, and put it in a microwave for 7-8 minutes. And
put butter, or you can use oil, either one, but she told me to use butter, but I use oil a lot of times.
Yeah,
but
it's
just
because
barely
you can't get Crisco anymore. I gotcha.
Yeah, just well, kind of oil.
Well, that's an interesting tip. I actually grow okra. Matter of fact, one of the few annuals. You know, I lost some stuff in this heat and drought. But the stuff that you put out every year, the annuals, my okra made it fine because it's from Africa. It likes hot, dry. I grow a variety called Burgundy okra. And when you cook it, it turns green. I'm going to give it a try in the microwave, see if it stays pretty in Burgundy.
Yeah. Well, it's real good like that. I mean, I don't like slimy okra either, but that way it's a lot better.
Okay. Well, a lot better. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
I am out of this conversation because I am an admitted not a okra fan.
I'm not, you know. Of course, you know, I say if you cut it up in pieces and fry it real or put ketchup on it. But, you know, state fair's coming up in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised. There's much different stuff that they sold over the year. I'm surprised nobody in the South sold fried ketchup.
Wait a minute.
I mean, come on. Come on. We fry everything. We put ketchup on it. Why don't you sell little nuggets of fried ketchup? Come on.
I wasn't ready for that one. Felder, we might need to set up a booth.
Felder, Jovan Felder's fried ketchup. Step right up. Anyway, let's go down to all the way to the Gulf Coast to Biloxi. Julie, thank you for holding. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Good. What's up?
Well, I have this nasty infection on my finger after working in the yard several weeks ago, and it's been diagnosed as cutaceous spirochetosis, and which is, from my research, says it's a fungus that lives in decaying plant matter.
Yeah.
Well, decaying plant matter is my favorite go-to when I'm mulching my bed soil.
It's called compost, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and so my question is, aside from wearing gloves, which I wasn't doing that day, and wearing long sleeves, my question is there anything else that you can suggest to me that I do to minimize this from happening again?
No.
I mean, is there, maybe stay away from certain...
this is a real good, it's an important concern. You know, it's not like everybody gets it, but this is a real common in the environment. I'll give you another example. All my life, I swam in lakes and rivers, all my life. But there's brain-eating amoeba out there. And every now and then, somebody gets up their nose and it eats their brain out. But everybody else doesn't get it. So it's one of those kind of things where it's common in nature, but it's uncommon to actually develop a problem. So it's risky. So matter of fact, I cut my finger. I was in England last week. I was potting some stuff up, and I sliced my finger. And because it was a foreign type of foreign kind of dirt, I'm not, sometimes it may not be the stuff my body's used to. So I went in, and I cleaned it out. It wasn't a bad cut, but I cleaned it and cleaned it and cleaned it and wrapped up, did all sorts of stuff, just in case there was some kind of bacteria in it that my body's not used to from being in dirt in Mississippi. So other than, if you get a cut or something like that, just clean it. But, you can get stuff like this from thorns, from all sorts. It's just the luck of the draw. So I would suggest, and this is common. It's common in dirt, so there's not much you can do about that. I would just wear gloves. It's not any fun. And I garden without gloves all the time. My fingers are all boogered. Matter of fact, my fingernail, I must have had a good time in the garden yesterday. My fingernails are horrible looking. But try not to chew your fingernails, and if you can, wear gloves. But, it was an unlucky thing. You just happened to get some at the right time and the right cut, and that was it. But it's out there all the time.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate your insight.
How's it going? Is it going to get better?
I hope so. I've been 3 weeks with it, and I'm on antifungal medicine. And
oh, so this is a fungus, not a bacteria.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, they're still there's nothing we can do about fungi and bacteria. They're just part of it. So,
yeah.
I gotta ask you, what were the symptoms? What made you, was it just nasty? Just wouldn't heal or something?
Well, at first I thought it was a spider bite because my tip of my finger got red and swollen and had like a hard knot on the inside of it.
Mm.
And after a week went by, I went to the doctor and she said it was cellulitis. And I told her that
on my finger.
And she said, picking up leaves and stuff. And I described what I was doing. And I did run across some decaying briar pieces. And I did get stuck. And I remember pulling it out of my finger. And I thought, well, it's that or it could be a spider bite. Well, anyway, it's been 3 weeks. And it hasn't gotten better as much as it's gotten worse.
Yeah.
But you're
under doctor care. You're not worried about sepsis and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No. You can get these things from seemingly clean surfaces and not get anything from really nasty stuff. It's just the luck of the draw. It's just like any other infection, but they're common in the environment. Most of the time, we develop a resistance. If not an immunity to these from exposure. One of the reasons why I let kids play in the dirt, but it's just the luck of the draw. It's like that brain-eating amoeba. All my life, we never had that. We just, and then all of a sudden find out swimming in the bio is not good for you because of the risk. Anyway, sorry. I hope it gets better.
Thank you. I'm going to invest in some good gloves, and I don't want this to happen again.
There you go. Well, good luck on it, and appreciate your alerting us about that, too.
Now, Felder, we're getting ready for our second break of the hour, and we got your cheesy tune queued up. But I don't know if you are familiar with the MPB Public Media app.
Well, you know, you tell me about it, but I'm one of these old guys.
Well,
so
I'll explain it
to other people, because, you know.
Well, it's a great thing to have on your mobile device. You download it. It's absolutely free, and you can get all of our podcasts. You can listen live wherever you go. If you have kids, you can even watch PBS Kids right from the app. But we also have this Talk to Us feature where people can leave comments, questions.
Could she show a picture of her nasty-looking finger?
She could show pictures. Ugh. She could shoot a video. You know, a lot of things. And then we get those talk to us that people send. And we got one from Mark in Oxford, and he has a question about his moon vine. So I'm going to play that right now.
Hey, Felder, this is Mark in Oxford. I was wondering if my moon vine is going to die back, or should I cut it back, or just let it keep growing?
Wow. Is he on the line, or has he just left that?
He just left that. That's
okay.
The Talk to Us feature. You okay. Leave it, and then we can answer your questions.
Okay, but okay. Well, if he's still listening, moonvine dies when it gets cold. It's an annual. Now, you can save the seeds, little hard white seeds. You can save and plant the next spring. And or sometimes they'll reseed from the cells. But no, moonvine dies down in the winter, just like gourds or any other kind of vine like that. How about that? I feel Mr. Technology here. Thank you, Java.
Yeah, and there it is.
Okay, listen, we got some callers on the line, but I want to play this little short tune. But first, let me throw out the three things that are coming up, three events where I'm going to be in the next week or so. Well, one is I mentioned that next Thursday night at 6 o'clock, and we're talking about the Noxipater Baptist Church, Family Life Center. They got a really cool setup. And matter of fact, Jim McAdory, the county extension, one of my heroes, he's going to be there. But anyway, I'm going to be talking about native plants that don't look wild and how to have a nice-looking yard that does well in the weather we've got. That's Noxipater Baptist Church between Louisville and Philadelphia next Thursday at 6 o'clock. The following Saturday, I'm going to be at the Hitchin Post Farmers Market in Columbus live in the back of my truck Saturday, the September the 23rd. I'm going to be there.
And now we have answers to unasked questions from Felder Rushing.
Thank you, sir. This is a real easy one. Java, I'm getting a lot of calls from people saying, my pear tree's blooming or wisteria's blooming. Things that bloom in the spring are blooming right now, and they want to know what the heck, what's up with that. And this is actually a fairly good, fairly normal thing. When plants are under stress, they think they're about to die. First thing they want to do is try to reproduce themselves, so they start flowering, making seeds. So it's stress. A lot of times we see it after hurricanes, you know, wind whips plants around and beats them up and throws them back and forth, and they think they're dying. Well, what causes this? We have a hormone called adrenaline. We get scared. Adrenaline makes us get up and go. And plants have a similar thing called traumatin from trauma. And when plants get injured or pruned or droughty or heat or something like that, it releases this hormone called traumatin, which kicks them into flowering. So heat and drought, hurricane winds, anything like that, it's normal. A lot of these plants are going to bloom fine in the spring, so don't worry about that. But anyway, what makes them do like that? They're upset, they're scared, they're freaked out, and they've got a little rush of traumatin just in case anybody asked.
That's funny that one, if the plant is under stress and thinks it's going to die, the one thing it needs to do is reproduce.
Yeah. And I tell you one other little stupid thing. You've heard people talk about switching okra.
Taking
a stick to it. That's right. What you're doing is you're beating the trauma out of it.
Now that makes sense.
You're creating trauma, which releases traumatin and makes it do better. And before we go to these calls, we got a call off the line from John. He said, cooking okra with tomatoes greatly reduces the slime. So, you know, this is a foodie version today of the Gestalt Gardener.
Yeah, we've turned into Deep South Dining.
There you go. Yeah, but cooking okra with tomatoes reduces the slime. I don't know about that. I don't know. But, you know, we put ketchup on it when it's fried, so maybe that works. Anyway, blinky lights. Which one of these things I...
Let's go up to our Tennessee cousins
Sharon.
And speak with Sharon.
In Memphis, Tennessee. Good morning, Sharon. How are you?
Hey, Felder. I'm good. How you doing?
Good. Something about your compost pile?
No. This question is about some arborvitaes.
Okay. This is another share. We got two share. The next one.
Sharon and Biloxi.
Okay. Anyway. Sorry, Sharon. what you got?
Okay. I had some Clieras growing over there, and that last winter killed them.
Yeah.
I thought they were. Anyway, we dug them up. One was so heavy, we couldn't move it, and it's come back.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we planted all these arborvitaes.
Yeah.
And
they're looking bad.
About a month ago, they started turning brown as can be.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering is if, like the Cliera, if I cut them back, will they come back? Or, and if I can, how do I do that, from the top down or from the sides in?
Okay. This is actually, it's a good question. It's actually more complex than most people realize. First of all, I lost a Cliera that was 80 years old. It was a foundation planting when my house was built in the 1940s. Died dead as a doorknob from this cold winter. Clara can normally take bad weather, but this, it got pushed. What I did, instead of digging it up, I cut it straight across and has five trunks as big as my thigh, and I put a glass tabletop on it. So, you know, and this is the same guy that just spray painted his dead magnolia tree glossy black. But anyway, I just cut it down. But anyway, and arborvitae and conifers like that, Leyland cypress, they can take extreme heat, extreme drought, extreme cold. We see them growing in cemeteries, but this back-to-back thing is what gives them problems. And if their roots stay too wet and then too dry, like we have here, then they get root damage. And when it turns hot and dry, really, really hot and dry, the roots just aren't there, and they start to brown out. And not much we can do about it. Once they're established, they're normally pretty tough. But to answer your question, conifers can't sprout back out when you prune them hard like broadleaf plants can. You know, Clara, azaleas, roses, you can cut those way back and they'll sprout back out. Conifers, like arborvitae and pines and junipers, they can't. When you cut them back where they don't have leaves left to older wood, it just dies. There's just nothing you can do with it. But you can try shearing it. As long as you cut it into the area that has leaves on it, you know, and even though the ones that are left may be brown, that little area can sprout back out. So light shearing might help, but cutting them way, way back just doesn't work with junipers and cedars and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, good. Wish me luck. I hope I can recoup some of them anyway.
And if it doesn't work, I got one word, and this is a John Waters type of moment. Spray paint. I know he did Hairspray, but, you know, John Waters did a movie called Hairspray. I'm going to do one called Spray Paint.
Speaking of music, that was the most bizarre version of Flight of the Bumblebee I've ever heard.
Yeah, that was
Yo-Yo Ma and Bobby McFerrin.
Bobby McFerrin, that's right. That's
and it's
right.
Funny because Bobby McFerrin, he did all of that with his mouth.
Yeah.
While Yo-Yo Ma was doing it with his instrument.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway,
I couldn't figure out what I was hearing. So.
Yeah, Bobby McFerrin, he was singing. Appreciate it, Sharon. Good luck on that. Okay, now which one are we going to?
To keep with continuity, let's go to Sharon in Biloxi.
Biloxi, from Memphis to Biloxi. Sharon, good morning. Thank you for holding. How are you?
Good morning.
Howdy.
Good morning. I'm fine.
What's up?
I have a compost question. I had a compost pile that was, I'd had about a year, and it was cooking along really nicely. And I hired a company to take care of my front yard grass. And when I put those clippings into the compost pile, I didn't realize I was putting fertilizer
yeah.
and weed killer and bug killer.
Yeah.
Will I be able to live long enough to see that compost pile be usable now or
that's,
not?
That's a really, really good question. And the answer is there's no problem. Those kind of things, the fertilizer is actually good. Fertilizer that's in your grass clippings helps fire up the bacteria and the fungi that actually do the work. So that's a good thing. The herbicides, typically, they bind really tightly to organic matter and decompose into carbohydrates. The modern ones do. And insecticides, they don't last any time at all in the environment. They're designed to work quickly and then have what's called a half-life. Every certain amount of time, they lose half their strength. So once you mix it in really, really good, and I'm an old organic gardener. I've written for Organic Gardener magazine, and I'm real sure of this. It ain't a problem.
Great. I'm so glad to hear that. I felt so stupid after I realized what I had done.
No, as a matter of fact, it's I'm so sure about this. I you know, go ahead. You can do it again. Just stir it all together and it'll be fine.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Appreciate it, Sharon. Thank you for calling. And by the way, I've got a, no, we're not going to do this. Let's go to Clinton and talk with Danny. Danny, thank you for calling. What's up?
The lady that had the problem with her finger.
Yeah, with the fungus, uh-huh.
Right. I had something similar to that about 20 years ago. I almost lost my hand.
Wow.
Don't take it lightly. Go to a specialist. It got into the synovium in my hand.
Ooh.
And I almost lost my hand. But anyway, go to a specialist. Do not take it lightly.
Yeah.
It can be not bad. It can be real bad. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good tip. We actually interviewed last year a woman who is a researcher who's been working with this for a long time, and I forget what when it was or the name of it, but you know, Java, we talked to her about it, and it is a really good concern. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, it can be a booger bear.
From the CDC.
Yeah, that's
well,
right.
Well, I'll pull that up and pull that podcast up.
Okay. Anyway, Danny, thank you. That's really, really good advice. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Don't take it light.
All righty. Appreciate it. Okay. Whew. That's scary, you know, but you know, I work in dirt. I take it seriously. I cut myself in some potting soil that had compost. I was repotting some stuff, and I had some shards of old clay pots in there. And I stuck my hand in there and sliced it. I said, you know what? My hand's not used to English compost. Ain't no telling what's in this dirt. But it probably anyway. So I really, really cleaned it good, more than I normally would have. But anyway, don't be scared. Just be careful. And if something happens, check it out. All righty, folks. Horticulture's Phil Rushing and Java. I've got a special opportunity this coming Monday here at MPB.
Yes, sir.
Marshall Ramsey is going to interview me on his program. I forget the name of his program.
Now you're talking with Marshall Ramsey.
Yeah.
10 o'clock Monday morning.
That's right. And he's going to, you know, we've known each other a long time, but he don't know me. Okay. And is there anything I can say to him that kind of mess with him?
I don't know.
Because, you know, he's got opinions. He's a, you know, a political cartoonist.
He does have a lot of things to say. I'm not sure. We may have to talk after the show.
Yeah, if there's something I can do to mess with Marshall Ramsey, it would be my pleasure. My pleasure. So I look forward to seeing folks on the Marshall Ramsey program at 10 o'clock?
Yeah, now you're talking with Marshall Ramsey, 10 a.m. immediately following Deep South Dining, which comes on at 9 a.m.
Okay, well, folks, I'm going to mess with him, so tune in. Let's have some fun. Now, let's go down to over Sandy Hook and talk with Debbie. Debbie, you've been holding on a long time. I appreciate it. What's up?
Not a problem. Thank you. I have found a small crepe myrtle, probably about 8 inches tall, and I want to bring it to my yard.
Uh-huh.
When is a good time to do it, and what do I do?
Well, you can plant a container-grown plant anytime you can dig a wide hole. But if you're going to dig something, that means separating it from its little feeder roots. And it's better to do that when it's not under heat and drought stress. Best to wait until after we get us a frost, the leaves have had a little color. In other words, after it's gone dormant. So you might want to go ahead and dig the hole first. And even though it's a little plant, I would still dig a wide hole, 2-3 feet across. It sounds stupid, but the quicker that little plant can grow side roots, the quicker it's going to get established and grow. So over the next month or so, I'd go ahead and dig the hole add a little stuff to it, cover it with leaves, maybe plant just some flowers there. And then as soon as we get us a frost or freeze, you can dig the new plant up, stick it right in the middle of the flower, take care of them, and that'll take care of the crepe myrtle.
Okay.
I'd wait till late fall or winter, though.
Okay, let me tell you this, too. An old Cajun gave me this remedy for desliming okra, and that is use a cast iron skillet and a little bit of grease, and you just kick up the heat, and it deslimes it.
Fry it. That's right. We're not going to – if it can flow, we're going to fry it up. That's a good tip. That's a really good tip. Thank you so much, and good luck on the crepe myrtle.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All righty. Let's go to Jim before we go to Rebecca. That's okay.
No,
too late.
Yeah, we got to go to Rebecca.
Okay. No, we don't got to. We want to go to Rebecca.
I'm sorry, Rebecca. Thanks, I didn't mean to say it like that.
Calling from Fulton. What's up, Rebecca?
Hey. Good morning. No, I was just calling to say, you know, the lady that was talking about muscadines, y'all were talking about muscadines and pepperonongs and all that kind of stuff earlier. And it's like, I love buying the, you know, it's a choice of whether or not you want to make jelly or buy a jelly.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and Mississippi State has those jelly packs. And I'd like to ask, what is mayhaw? Because I've had the jelly before, but yeah. Is it a tree or what?
Yeah, mayhaw is a type of hawthorn, which is related to apples and pears. And mayhaws are native, mostly to South Mississippi, and they grow in low wet areas. They're called haw ponds. You know, they stay kind of wet in the winter and they dry out in the summer. But a mayhaw, the fruit itself looks like a crab apple. It's got the tree's got pretty white flowers, and the fruits look like crab. And they're related, but they're a native crab apple type of fruit, mayhaw.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's time to buy that. It's time to get some cheese before Christmas.
But, yeah. And I tell you what, if you want to try making some jelly, there's two kinds of jelly that people make and nobody thinks about it. But I see it all the time. And a lot of country folks know what I'm talking about. You can make jelly out of the fragrant flowers of kudzu. Kudzu's blooming right now. And it's got nice, they're like upright clusters of wisteria. They smell like cheap, great bubble gum. It makes fantastic jelly. But we also have another native plant that's got fruit right now. It's little golf ball-sized clusters of kind of magenta, purplish-looking berries called American Beauty Berry. It just doesn't taste like anything. Got no sugar. It just tastes mealy. But it makes the prettiest jelly you've ever seen. And the berries are ripe right now.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate your call, Rebecca. Thank you. Okay, let's go to Jim in Jackson. Good morning, Jim. Thank you for calling. What's up?
Morning, Felder. Jim Rosenblatt here.
Dean Rosenblatt. I saw you yesterday.
Congratulations on your son being promoted to major. But I wondered, as I understand, you have military service. Did you do any gardening when you were in the military?
Nothing I can talk about, Dean. This is back during the days of Vietnam, a long time ago. No, actually, I take it back. I was in the Navy band, and we worked whenever there was stuff to do, and we practiced. But I worked part-time in both San Diego and in Corpus Christi at garden centers. When I was off, you know, off work with the Navy band, I worked in garden centers. How about that?
That's good. Any lessons that you brought back to Mississippi from there?
Well, you know, both places are real dry. I brought plants back from Corpus Christi, some Sansevieria, the old mother-in-law tongue-type plants, and I learned how to propagate honeysuckle, you know, plants that are really, really tough because that's a harsh climate down there. So I got to start early on learning how to grow plants that grow in a harsh climate, and that's all coming back to me now that we've got a harsh climate.
Well, I know that we survived the drought, perhaps, but
so far,
were there any plant were there any plants that did well when you were away for that period?
Yeah, I was gone for 3 months, and nobody watered my garden at all. But a lot of my plants did quite well. I have agaves and succulents. My okra did fine. My sweet potato. I got three different kinds of sweet potatoes. Matter of fact, I've got them here with burgundy leaf, lime green leaf, and sort of a rusty leaf. My sweet potatoes did fine. The okra did fine. And I grow those as flowers, not as vegetables. My African blue basil did well. But for the most part, it was just some surprises, that didn't make it. And we're not done yet, Dean. Not done yet. We're going to have to wait and see.
I think the okra flower is one of the most beautiful flowers there is.
It's a hibiscus. So anyway, appreciate it. And I want to thank you for your service. You're retired full bird colonel.
Right.
And dean emeritus of the law school, and you took time out of your schedule to come out and tap my son into being a major with the Army. I appreciate that a whole lot. You took time out of your time to come out and do that, and I appreciate it.
Well, he's a fine officer and a fine young man, and I know you're proud.
And I happen to know that you're a dean of a law school, emeritus, and in the corner of the parking lot, you grow okra. Come on, Jim. You are so country. To be such a smart, intelligent, world travel, just got from Alaska, and you grow okra in a parking lot. That is country.
It's the way I can keep my green thumb.
There you go. Appreciate you, Kyle Dean. Stay cool and hydrated.
Thanks, Felder.
All right. That was a surprise. No, my son, he started out as a Marine, enlisted, made up to staff sergeant.
Well, congratulations
to he went over to, he became a lawyer, and I went with the Army JAG Corps, and he was tapped out to be a major. I got to be nice. And what's really funny, he's Major Rushing now.
Yes.
His dog was named Major. So he and the dog are the same rank now. And I told him yesterday, he looks sharp, his crisp, military officer uniform. I said, it looks good, but it ain't a Marine uniform.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, there's a lot of stuff going on, Java. A lot of stuff. Didn't have a chance to talk about my three different leaves of sweet potatoes. We learned about how to eat okra that won't be so slimy. And I had a couple of things I wanted to share, but they can wait till next week. Meanwhile, I'm going to be in Noxapater. I think this is the smallest town I've ever lectured in, but it's a cool little town right between Louisville and Philadelphia. Next Thursday night at 6 o'clock, plant swap. I'm going to show some pictures. We're going to whoop it up. Going to be in my truck. And then the following Saturday, a week from tomorrow, on the 23rd, me and my truck are going to be at the Hitch and Post Farmer Market, downtown Columbus, Mississippi. It's a free event. We're going to have a lot of fun. Bring stuff to talk about. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be at the Max in Meridian. We'll talk about that next week. But me and Java and all the folks at MPB, Will Pickering, our new intern, we're going to take a little week-long break, come back and talk about gardening next week. Hope to tune in. Some of y'all tune in Monday when I'm being interviewed by Marshall Ramsey. But mostly, if you have a chance, go to a farmer's market. They got a lot of stuff going on. They struggled this year. They got stuff that they did themselves. They made it or they grew it themselves. Take a kid with you. Teach them how to do what we do best, folks, which is get dirty. See y'all next week.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.